Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is the Mark Boris Podcast.
Good morning. Bleak morning in Sydney here. Bloody freezing. Heard us snowing up in the mountains, but we'll get through it. No dramas. Got the two Nicks here today. Fordo and Boris.
Two Nicks don't make a right.
Two Nicks don't make a right.
I'd question that.
There's definitely something wrong going on. And Nick B and I, and I guess everybody else in the room, Jakey and Nick Fordham, want to wish Alexander Boris the best on his wedding this Friday. First of the siblings to get married. That's cool.
First and last.
First and last. Against my advice, he's doing it. Anyway, no, good on him. Good luck to him. And Siobhan to his beautiful wife-to-be. Righto. I guess, yeah, we're going to talk about a number of things this morning, but I just want to quickly talk about what the RBA did yesterday. And as we know, the RBA meets the first Tuesday of every month and they sit down and have their cup of tea in Lamingtons and hold hands and sort of work out what they're going to do with the interest rates. And not surprisingly, and it was predicted pretty heavily by most economists, that they reduced the rate yesterday by 0.25%. So our official rate today is 1.5%, which is extraordinarily low. The first thing you'd have to ask yourself is, whilst people are jumping up and down and clapping their hands, saying, yeah, interest rates are going down, let's look at some of the consequences of that. The first consequence, of course, is the deposit rates have come down. And there are a lot of people in this country, and there is an aging population who rely on the money they have in the bank, for example, my parents, who all of a sudden can't afford to live. If you've got your money,
quite a lot of cash at the moment as well, mate. I'm feeling it.
You're cashed up. Nick's cashed up. Good on you, man.
No, but I'd rather the interest rates be high from my point of view.
And it's funny. It's always about the mortgage.
Yeah.
Interest rates always about the mortgage. Low interest rates mean 2.5 million or 3 million, whatever it is, the number of people in the country get an advantage out of it. But more importantly, there is a lot of people get disadvantaged by it, and those people who rely on their savings to live off. They just have to cut back. So, you know, pensioners in particular, some like my parents, they can't go and say, oh, we're not getting, we're not earning enough money out of deposit now, so what we're going to go and do is we go and get a bit of part-time work. They're in their 80s. They're not going to go and get part-time work. So they're not, A, they're not productive, and B, they're not contributing to the gross domestic product, and that is that they are not spending. Household consumption drops, which is why interest rates are low at the moment, because our inflation numbers are extraordinarily low. And we've got to be very careful around this environment. So that's the first thing. The second thing is this. And this is really important. The interest rate is not going to get passed on at 0.25. So the RBA wants the 0.25 to be passed on so that it can stimulate the economy. That's the main reason why the RBA is doing it. They did talk about subdued wage prices. So what they mean by that is wage prices, or the wages are not going up in Australia. They haven't gone up for a long time now. And those wage increases are not keeping pace with house prices, for example. So there is a disparity now between the price of houses and the increase in price of houses and the increase of wages, which support house prices. So there is a gap widening all the time, which is quite dangerous in terms of property prices in this country. And where it becomes a major problem is that the retail banks don't pass on the full rate. So I noticed this morning that of the four major retail banks, I think the highest amount passed on to borrowers was 13 basis points. So, and they're all saying they're not going to pass it on to the 19th of August, which is a couple of weeks away. So they're holding the interest rate pass on back. So that makes a fortune for them when you think about the size of the books. We're talking about $1 trillion books in relation to mortgage mortgage in this country. You withhold 25 basis points for a couple of weeks. You're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars going to the bottom line of the banks. That's the first thing. The second thing is when they don't pass the whole amount on, they make quite a lot of dough. And the excuse that's being put out, and I accept this excuse, the excuse that's been put out by the banks is this. They are saying, we can't pass on the full 25 basis points because we need to encourage investors to put more money in our bank accounts, which means we need to sort of hold back some of those base points and pass it on to depositors like Nick Boris. And that is probably right because the banks now have a lot of pressure put on them to have more capital, to hold more capital. That's been put onto them by the regulator and also by the global sort of standards that are now being applied to banks. But the reason why we're now getting pressured onto our banking system to put more money on, have more money on deposit, for our banks to have more money in deposit, is because for many, many years, our regulator didn't put pressure on our banks to hold the same amounts of capital that foreign banks have been holding. So now we're playing catch up. So our whole country, all our consumers are getting punished because of what our banking system now is required to do. And, you know, when you sit back and think about it, you wonder to yourself, well, I wonder whether the banks are going to start paying themselves less bonus or whether or not the banks are going to make less profits. Well, the banks are still going to make the same amount of profit. No matter what happens, they're going to make sure they still make their $8 billion a year each. So I just think that there needs to be some sort of discussion around this. I'm not calling for a Royal Commission. I see Scott Morrison said, oh, well, banks are, you know, happy to do anything, you know, whatever they want to do, whatever they think is appropriate. I don't accept that. I think someone needs to have a look at this and have a look at how the policy of monetary policy is not going to work properly, given that the banks now are being pressured by the regulator and the banks actually have the ability to do whatever they want. I just think it's unfair. There's something wrong. Don't need a Royal Commission, but we definitely need a discussion. What do you reckon, guys?
Yeah, it makes sense, I guess.
Don't get so excited. I was.
Sorry, interest rates just don't do it for me.
Except for when you've got your money in your deposit.
Yeah, exactly, which is not doing much.
When you think about it, what do you earn, 1.9%, 1.8%?
I actually just put some money in that in one of those ING accounts, and they give me 3%, actually.
So, yeah, but for how long? For a quarter?
No, it's annual, compounded daily or whatever it is.
3%, okay. Yeah, so 3%, and let's say inflation is... Let's say inflation is 2 for argument's sake.
Yep.
So you make net 1.
Yeah,
and how much tax you pay? And by the way, you pay tax on the 3% though.
That's true, yeah. Absolutely.
So what?
Yeah.
So your position is negative.
Well,
a tax on 3%.
But it's a tax on the dollar amount of that I earn. Right?
Yeah, so
let's just say corporate.
No, let's work it out. You've got $100 and let's say you earn $3, okay?
Correct. You get taxed on the $3.
Okay, you've got to pay a dollar.
Yeah.
Let's assume your tax rate is 30%.
You've
got to pay a dollar, right?
Yeah.
So you've got to put the dollar aside. That's so you've made $2, okay?
Yep.
After tax. And I just said the interest rate's 2%. 2% on $100 is 2%. So you've lost money. You didn't make any money.
It's not the stuff I wanted to talk about. But I mean, losing money.
But Nick, what's the point?
Yeah.
Because you know what actually happens? You'll spend that money before the tax is due and you won't have the tax.
Yeah. That's true.
I'll go a little deeper into it. The question becomes, okay, you're saving to buy a house. House prices are going to gallop ahead of you at a faster rate than the amount of interest that you earn, much faster rate, and definitely going to gallop faster than you than in relation to the wages you earn because your wage increases.
Because you pay my wages.
Correct.
And you don't pay me enough.
Correct. So, and there's no increases. So as a result of that, and I can say the same. I mean, at Yellow Brick Road, I've got a wage freeze, for example. I said, no more wage increases. So, you know, like there's something wrong. There's a disconnect in the economy. And I think this is what the Reserve Bank's worried about. And I think that's the reason why interest rates are so low.
Yeah. I've got an apartment of mine, which I'm putting on the market. It goes on this Saturday and I bought it about 12 years ago. It's in Surry Hills. And it's going to fetch a really good dollar. But I got into the market early on. Actually, my first property was in King's Cross and it was $125,000 for a studio. Sold it for $250,000, used that money, bought a place for $525,000 in Surry Hills, and going to sell that for a decent amount. But I worry about, you know, the youth these days are coming out of university and everything else. It's unfathomable how people can actually afford to buy anything, you know, like it's
correct
to actually get into the market, you know, and people want to live in the city. They don't want to live out in the suburbs. So it's but anyway, it's a good apartment.
Well, when I see
in Bellevue Street, Surry Hills.
Yeah,
Cobden and Hastings.
Please inspect. What time is the opening? but on that point, though, that's an interesting point. What that means is that either one or two things are going to happen. Either wages are going to be pressured to increase to be able to afford to buy those sort of apartments,
yeah.
Or those apartment prices have to come down. It can't keep going this way. So the income to asset price ratio, which I often talk about, in certain sectors, segments of the market, like Surry Hills, is getting out of control. Unless you've got a foreign buyer who is not that reliant upon their wages and they have a lot of capital and don't therefore need to service a debt like the Chinese market was doing in Australia, then unless that's the case, generally speaking, it'd be fair to say that there's Australians can't afford to buy real estate in certain pockets in Sydney, for example, like Surry Hills. So something's got to give. Something has to change. Either the wages go up or those people stop paying for those prices. So, mate, hurry up and sell it.
Well, the other thing as well, when you say about wages going up, and part of the discussion today is I always think about that, you know, I'm fortunate in a job where I'm the boss and I'm master of my own ship. But
the big dicky.
The big dicky, the big cheese. But in terms of people that are in jobs at wages that and they want to earn more money, I think there's now is a time.
Hang on a second. Is this bloke filming us?
Sure.
No, he's filming the Coke sign.
Yeah. What's going up there now?
So did you hear what it's – I'll finish my story in a second.
No,
they're fixing the Coke sign.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
They actually are replacing the letters on there, and when they went home the other night, it had C-O-C, so enjoy cock. Yeah. And so I think it may have been a bit of banter of the guys actually doing it, but
Okay. Yeah. I'm disappointed. I thought he might be filming the Mark Boris show in the X studio here.
I'm sure he is.
It's very popular.
Yeah.
Okay, so go on.
What was I saying, sorry?
We're talking about leadership or but working for yourself.
Yeah, and more time. Now is the time to think creatively and entrepreneurially to think, you know, if you are in a job the way you're in a wage that you're not happy with and you want to get ahead, this is the time now to think creatively and,
Let's flip that for a second. Do you think everyone a lot of people are going, I stuff this, I'm going to go work for myself.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there are people out there that probably shouldn't be doing it as well? Definitely.
You know, it needs to be an educated decision around that. But sometimes you've got to, if you've got a bit of drive and nous and, you know, Nick and I are working with someone at the moment who's just had his first baby and, you know, he's just left his big agency and gone out doing a startup and his business partner has got the full-time job. Sure. To fund the startup, and he's said he's living on baked beans, but he's got a dream and a vision, and he's hungry. So the whole wage increase thing, I think that's important, but I think also it's back to the individual to stop whinging.
Well, they've got to supplement their wages. If the wage is not enough, get another job or whatever.
I mean, it's so exciting in this day and age to what's possible.
Well, the necessity has always been the mother of invention, and we know the government keeps talking about innovation and like, let's innovate, let's invent things, and let's like recreate things. You know, one thing is for sure is what's probably going to happen is the government's going to drive the economy into such a bad shape that everyone's going to have to do something. So, which is where it's happened because people aren't going to get an increase in wages, so they're going to actually be forced to do something innovative or entrepreneurial or change the way they operate. I mean, and the great thing about the internet is it allows you to do that sort of stuff after hours or at night, weekends. Like Nick Boris he's always looking at some new idea, something, and you know, it's all about supplementing his income at some stage. You know, become a billionaire by the time he's 30, if possible.
Trillionaire.
He's gone straight through the alphabet, straight to T.
You know what? In my high school yearbook, they said they wrote most likely to ... about everybody, right? And they said Nick Boris most likely to be the first person to make $1 million. All right. But the second thing they wrote about me was the first person also to lose $1 million. So, yeah, I don't know if I've
in which order?
If I achieve that, I could still achieve that, right? Assuming no one else has made $1 million, but I'm not sure if that's the case amongst
my
peer group.
It's better actually to lose $1 million before you make $1 million.
Well, lose $1 million I don't have.
Yeah, yeah, because it doesn't matter, then you don't have to pay it. But
yeah,
then go and make it. Don't go and make it and
Chapter
lose it.
Chapter 11. What's the Australian version of that?
It's part nine or something.
Part nine or something, yeah.
One of the phenomena that I've noticed on this topic is that I've never seen so many people, and I don't know whether it's because of the Mark Borah Show or what, but I've never seen so many people come to me with new ideas about different things they want to start up. Yeah. Startups. I don't know if it's a new phenomenon or is it because of the show. I don't know whether it already exists and we just dug it up. Yeah. My gut feeling is probably a bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've never met so many people coming to me with new ideas. I mean, on LinkedIn, I mean, I get hit up every single day about new ideas. Like people come to me, can I come and see you about this idea? Can I see you about that idea? Can I see you about that idea? And the same through Twitter, although I get a lot more weird shit out of Twitter. And then people just emailing me at the office. Or people I used to know who I haven't seen for 5 years coming to me with a funds management idea or something like that. It's gone crazy.
Do you know how many people have gone bankrupt?
This year?
No, just in general. I mean, that's one of the things that when I think that whole idea of people having to file for bankruptcy if people have been negligent in what they do, I agree that, you know, they need to be sort of put on the reserve bench for a while. But when a government's trying to encourage people to innovate and take risk and take chances and everything else, yeah. The punishment for I've got a mate of mine who's was in construction, had, you know, 85 staff, did everything right. And there was other reasons, compounding reasons,
GST.
which went, you know, put his business under.
Yep.
You know, lost his house, lost his confidence, lost, you know, he can't.
And they take their passport away.
Everything. And it's just like, but he was doing everything right, employing a lot of people, paying taxes, doing, you know, growing, and just gets the book thrown at him. So I think even from that in, when a government is talking about innovate and, you know, take risk and jobs and growth and everything else. But if you fail, you get destroyed.
In America, that's not the case.
Yeah.
You can, as Nick said, you can
apply for president. That needs to be right.
You can be president of the United States after three goes at it.
Yeah.
I mean, and by the way, that's one of the things they announced in the 20-odd innovations from the government last year and around December time was to change the bankruptcy rules. But what they've actually done is they've said in relation to certain segments of the market, and it hasn't gone through Parliament yet, but if you become bankrupt as a result of doing a startup, you only lose your passport for 1 year. What the hell? Like, lose your passport?
Passport, yeah.
Well, I mean, let's say you know, you've got a business that's got a global application or something like that.
Not a terrorist.
You can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Mate, terrorists don't lose their passport.
Well, you've already lost. I mean, like, you know, you've already declared that you've got no money. So they're not going to chase you, obviously, right? So, I mean, why prohibit you from leaving the country?
I don't know. It's a punishment.
If you still had a liability around your neck, then take the passport away because you're a flight risk and not getting your money back. But they've already – it doesn't make sense. They've already said, okay, you wipe slate clean, but I'm going to hold you here for a year.
Where it makes sense, Nick, is they're thinking. Their thinking is, oh, we're going to punish you for going bankrupt. And that's Nick Fordham's whole point.
Yeah, yeah.
You should not get punished.
It shouldn't be a punishment. It should be more like
a management.
A compliance thing. It's like, listen, okay, you've demonstrated you're a bit of a risky – sort of dude. We want to sort of manage.
And we don't want you to be on a board for the next year or two exactly. or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you make some shitloads of money next year, maybe you should pay some of the creditors back at 20 cents on the dollar, whatever it is. But, mate, to take someone's passport off, my thing is so demeaning. It's like effectively saying you're imprisoned in Australia.
Yeah. Especially when someone's just having a crack and having a decent crack. You know, there should be different categories of bankruptcy where, you know, the people that, you know, have not been, you know, haven't lost other people a lot of money. You know, if it's their own business,
and
they've
just
grown.
Yeah, it'd be different if it's a Phoenix style bankruptcy. In other words, 100%. Where I go bankrupt tomorrow and the next day I come up with a brand new business which is flush full of money.
Yeah,
it'd be different if you're siphoning money off all the time. That's a totally different.
And the
situation.
Liability shouldn't go away. I mean, I heard there was someone on the news the other day that came forward that Donald Trump still owes money. You know, like from one of the towers he built. The guy's owed, you know, $500,000 or something like that. You know, Donald's got billions now. Why can't he pay him back?
Yeah, we should. I agree with that. I mean, bankruptcy shouldn't be a full stop, but bankruptcy should not also be a punishment.
Yeah.
So I think they need to revisit that because we need to encourage more people to go into business. The whole point here is if you think it's all going to be too hard and if you've heard horror stories about friends of yours have gone into business and they've lost everything, why then would you take the risk?
I guess it's a good segue into a topic that I wanted to talk about. How do you know when to keep going and how do you know when to stop? And file for bankruptcy or
just, you know, pull out,
liquidate the business, or
just pull
wind
out.
It up. Yeah,
Well, I mean, obviously one of the big characteristics, one of the strong characteristics or virtues of a successful person is they never give up, and they're persistent, and they're consistent and persistent, and they hang in there and they keep plugging away. But that's got to be done with a level of intellect.
Mm.
You've got to apply intellect to these things as well. And you've always got to be continually got to be reassessing your chances of success and have other people give you a view on it.
Sure.
Not just doggedly saying, I'm the guy, I know more about it than you do, don't tell me what's going to work and what's not going to work. I just think that's a really big mistake. So we need to have, not mentors, but someone who we trust.
How do you know, like, because I mean, you know, Jack Ma, I was already, you know, the Alibaba guy, I think it was 10 years before he cracked it, you know, and, you know, you look at some people that are going, you can look at him and go 10 years and he did it, that's persistence, and you can look at someone else who hasn't cracked it yet and is 10 years along, you go, you're stupid. Like, how do you know? You know, like when's that inflection point come?
Because
you need to stop.
Well, the first thing is I think it's about what you're achieving on the way through. So it's not just saying, am I being persistent? Have I got a good idea? It's am I achieving the milestones? And are the milestones going to get to the ultimate goal? So in regard to Alibaba, I think he kept seeing the milestones. He was in a growing industry for a start. You know, we've got to be in an industry that is, or an environment like the internet, that is growing, or e-commerce, I should say, is growing and growing and growing exponentially, that's at least you're in the right spot.
You know? You're being lifted with the tide.
You're coming, rising tide.
Yep.
Everybody rises with a rising tide. That's the first thing. The second thing is, do you have the right technology in his case, or the right ability to apply your business through technology to that rising tide? I think that certainly was the case in his position. Are there others who are doing brilliantly, who are doing exactly the same as me, but am I attacking a different market? So he was attacking the Asian market and he's looking at Google. Google's doing the Google market, you know, or Amazon. Mm. I mean, he's looking at those environments. Oh, shit, they're doing really well.
The American market.
And he's doing the Asian market. So he was doing the right thing. In other words, he wasn't some pioneer trying to do something that no one else has ever done. Mm. And I guess as well as that, he's probably risking other people's money.
Yeah,
and I think that's a big part of it. Like he's probably had people willing to keep backing him.
It's different when it's your own money.
Correct. Yeah. If it's your own money, then you're risking completely stuffing everything up.
It's your time as well. I mean, you know, 10 years is a long time to sort of commit to something without, you know, having an economic result for yourself personally.
Yeah, but I've been in businesses that have done that sort of thing, and you know, like it's if you're in the right. As you said, a rising tide. If you're in an environment which is rising and one you are an expert in and one that you have sort of the appropriate technology and you have the wherewithal to succeed in, and others are succeeding. But everyone else is falling off the perch.
Yep.
You've got to stop.
So you've decided that, you know, it's worth it to keep going. What are some of the techniques that you can use to, I don't know, to keep getting yourself out of bed in the morning and stay persistent?
That's hard, Nick. That comes down to personality and character. And that comes down to a lot of your support group, your own.
Or if you've got a family and they're sort of telling you, you know, your wife and your kids are telling you, listen, we need you to go and get a job.
Good job.
You know,
well,
and
that happens
and
a lot.
Leave the business alone or.
I actually think a lot comes down to what it is, the idea. You know, if it's a shit idea and you're constantly out there, you know, if you're 5 years into it and every time you present it to people, you're knocked back and shot down.
And you can't be tipped to.
It's probably not worth pursuing, but I've been in some projects and some now very successful projects, like a Outback Wrangler on Nat Geo, that it took us 10 years, me and Matt Wright, to get it where it is. It's now in 63 countries, but early on, every TV network.
What time's Outback Wrangler, mate?
7:30 on Nat Geo. But everyone that I met, TV producers, everything early on, questioned me of saying, have you ever made TV before? It's like, no, but I think I've got a pretty good product here. But every time I'd show people reels, they would go, that's incredible. So I was encouraged by other people always reinforcing my own belief that my product was great. And that's why just persistence and timing. But if you're constantly sharing your idea and your vision with people.
And people aren't getting excited.
And they're not getting excited. Well, I think that's a pretty clear
sign. That's a great tip.
And then if your wife's going, hey, listen, go and get a job.
Yeah.
Well, you might need to listen because sometimes people can live in a bubble and especially these days with startups and everything else, as we've seen with this show, there's a lot of people develop stuff in their lounge room. You know, they're not out there in workspaces and connecting with people and sharing the ideas. They live in a bubble and they can invest their own money into it and everything else, but you know, when they present it and present it here and present it to other people, it's not a
well. That's
a
cool because last night I was talking to a guy who's got an idea, and I said to him, "Look," and he said, "Look, can I send you a copy of it?" And I said, "Mate, the more people you talk to about the idea, just keep getting feedback." And you just made an important point. You can't build and develop these ideas in a black room and not talk to anyone about it. You've got to get out and keep expressing it and talking.
Join a co-working space.
Join a co-working space.
Yeah, yeah. And a friend of mine's talking about that at the moment. He's like, oh, you know, he's down in Melbourne, so he can't join ours. But, yeah, he's willing to pay whatever it is just to have other people, like-minded people around him. That
and you get a sense. From it. And not only inspiration, but actually pitch to them and practice your pitch validation. Validation. Yeah. Not only should seek validation, Nick, but you should actually somehow bank the validation and make sure the validation is bankable. So in other words, it's got to be from real people. People have a real understanding, you know, who aren't bullshitters. You know, they're going to give you a fair income response.
Yeah, don't just ask your mum.
And don't just ask your missus either. And by the way, equally, don't just listen to missus when she said it's a shit idea as well, because you know, you've got to have some balance, but you've got to keep asking, keep talking, and just don't talk to the same person all the time. Keep going to new people. Because if I say something's a good idea and a guy comes back, I'm going to probably say it's a good idea again, you know, because I'm not going to sort of go back on where I was, you know, unless I know more. So you've got to just keep talking and keep – so but TZ's a good example for me. Like TZ, I knew a great technology, but we needed validation. We needed commercial validation, so we needed people actually to give us a check to sign off, and even if it was only for $100,000 worth of sales, that's commercial validation and understanding why you couldn't get a check for $2 million, because the process of actually installing these mechanisms, this mechanical system, was sort of labor intensive. So I knew that you weren't going to get a check for $2 million, but 100 here, 120 there, 150, then it grew and it grew and it grew and it grew. And as long as it just keeps growing and you get more commercial validation, then you're on to a good thing. That just means you need patient capital. So then you've got to go out and seek capital equity from people who are patient.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, TZ's a B2B business. Yellow Brick Road's a B2C. What do you think? Like, you know, a lot of people write in and they ask, you know, when I'm building and designing a product, what's the best thing to do as a startup with no resources? Which market do I have the best chance of reaching? Do you think a B2B or a B2C is probably the way to go when you're starting out? I think any business eventually has the ability to be both.
Yeah.
You know, assuming they succeed in
I think there's much more competition in B2C because it's perceived as easier and there's a lot of people, you know, building apps and all that sort of stuff. I mean, a good example, Nick, is the thing you and I are working on at YBR.
Sure.
That technology platform.
Yep.
It would seem we have a choice to go B2C or B2B, and it would seem to me the commercialization, to commercialize is probably easier to go to B2B.
Because they got an imperative. Like what I'm finding is they've got an imperative. You know, when you're selling to a business, I mean, they're sitting there going, "Okay, we either need to improve our revenues, or we need to reduce our costs, and we have to do this, otherwise we're out of business." Having a discussion with someone who's selling a product that can do either of those two things is really important.
And they
make it happen. Whereas me as a consumer, like, I mean, me as a business, I would definitely get out there because it's my, you know, it's my livelihood. But I mean, when I'm sitting at home and someone's calling me up trying to save me money or maybe more, I've switched off. I'm in a different mode. I'm harder to sell to.
Well, I mean, it's funny you should say, because only yesterday I was seeing, I used to always have his mantra. And Kerry taught it to me, Kerry Packer. He said to me one day, he said, "Son, I want you to go and do an analysis of the business." This is in the Wizard days. He said, "I want you to either increase revenue or decrease costs. I want more profit." And he was a 50% shareholder. And I said, "Okay." And he said to me, "So the way I want you to think about it," he said, "you go and ask all your managers and all the people you employ and ask them one question. And based on their answer, you decide whether they should stay or go. And then you ask him to ask the same question of everybody who works for them under them. The question is this, do you make me money or do you save me money? If you don't do either one,
you're going.
Yeah.
And that's a good point Boris just made. Business owners will look at anything that's going to save money or make more money. So if you're coming up with a new idea, a new innovative idea, it's it's a good channel to go to B2B because that's what they think of and build something that's going to save someone money or make them more money within an industry that you might have some expertise or have some sort of insight or have some sort of inspiration into. And I think that to answer your question about B2B or B2C, I think B2B is a better avenue right now, especially because it's current. Right now, it's current.
People need a bigger marketing budget to reach the reach consumers,
and that's a killer, mate.
You need above the line stuff, and well, you can't reach. You know, you can go and see one business and reach potentially millions of dollars of revenue versus, you know, having to go and reach up, you know.
A million people, we're going to give a dollar worth of revenue each person. Well, the cost is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The cost of marketing today is still really expensive relative to everything. So, like, and if you want to, you know, if you want to bust everyone's balls and take a segment out of a market or a section out of a new segment, an old segment, you need a heavy marketing.
Mm.
And that's just still costs a lot of dough.
The other thing as well, whether B2B or B2C, that I think it comes down to, and Mark, you've talked often about this, about creativity. It comes down to the idea. Like, what is your business? Some advice that my old man gave me early on in my professional career was when he was my boss, he said, you know, don't make me money. Making money is easy. Create me money, you know, create new ideas.
Don't do the same thing over and over.
Don't do the same. I mean, it's easy to do that when you've got a successful business and easy to make money. Just doing the same, but create new opportunities, you know, think creatively. And I think taking a bit of risk and coming up, you know, taking some time to think creatively, there's no point just going there and opening another law firm or, you know, launching something.
Or another cafe.
Another cafe or something like that, because people pour their time. And I see it so often of people, you know, where I live, opening a new cafe, and you can see that there's nothing like we had in here, the girls from Scouts Honour, you know, they just nail it, you know, and they set a whole new benchmark in an area, and then the person down the road opens a cafe and they're sort of hitting the sort of 60, 70% mark. And it's like,
don't stand.
Shit, it's going to be a long road ahead, you know.
Well, that's an example of the Alibaba thing we were just talking about.
Yeah.
So the girls from Scouts Honour have gone, okay, cafes do well in Sydney for some reason. It doesn't really matter what the reason, but cafes do well. People eat out and drink the coffee out. So I'm in a growing environment, in a rising tide, but like Alibaba, how can I do something different?
Yeah.
What is it that's different? And they've come up with a different, Scouts Honour's come up with a different version of the product.
Different version, and when they're closed at night, they've got a catering business. You know what I mean? So they then use the catering business to make more money and then open their second place. You know what I mean? Like rather than just opening a cafe and serving coffee from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m.
So they do something outside the cookie cutter. They do the cookie cutter, but they do something outside.
And then reinvest and take a bit of risk, but making sure that the quality of what they do is different to everyone else. You know, they've got a different position, you know. So
your business is a great example of that, like not standing still, being open to new opportunities, doing different things. So, I mean, I guess when your old man was running the place, it was probably just more
talent management.
I mean, you look at what the Fordham company does now. You
know, they do everything.
Nutrition, television production.
Sports TV rights. That's why as well, it suits my personality.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing as well. How do people, when you asked it before, how do people get going? You know, it's almost a thing of going, my view is to ensure that, what are you doing there?
Stretching.
Okay. I'd love people having some skin in the game, you know, and whether it's their time, and a lot of their time, or whether it's investing their own money, and not saying to someone, hey, listen, invest your life savings, but put some skin in the game. You know, when you talk about Alibaba using other people's money, you know, I think that's something as well, because when you're 100 grand in the hole on an idea, if you're smart enough, you'll work your way out of it, you know, because you'll do everything to try and crack the safe.
Yeah.
But if there's no risk there, you know, you need that motivation, you need that, waking up at 2 a.m. thinking, Jesus, how am I going to get out of this one, you know? And
there's no one more motivated than that Jack Meyer guy. I think have you read his story? He got rejected from Harvard 10 times, applied for every other Ivy League university, rejected him 10 times after he finished his degree at the community college in downtown Beijing or something, applied for all the big gold-plated firms. They rejected him. Couldn't get a job at KFC. I think he applied for a job.
So he had a fuck you moment.
Cooking chicken at KFC. And they wouldn't let him do that, you know. So I think the only job he did get, because he spent some time in Hangzhou at a hotel, and just by talking to the guests, he learned English. And after he became...
He's obviously a bright guy, though.
Proficient at English. Yeah, absolutely. After he became proficient in English, he taught English. as a language, as a second language to Chinese people.
Persistence.
And now he's you know, he's one of the richest men on the planet, running one of the biggest e-commerce companies.
Well, it is the biggest e-commerce company in the world.
I think you're right.
It's bigger than Amazon today.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
And its market cap is just ridiculous. And obviously he saw a huge market, the Chinese market, which he knows, and no one was getting into it. And he was lucky too, because the other brands, the North American brands, aren't allowed into China. What's interesting in China, like Instagram's not in China.
But I don't think he was looking for opportunities. I think he was like, okay, well, I've got nothing else.
Necessity is the mother of invention all the time. Yeah. I mean, I remember.
It wasn't like I'm too good for Goldman Sachs or something. It's like, I actually can't work there.
Well, I remember when I worked at the law firm. I mean, the times that I worked the hardest is when I needed the most money, because I only got paid what I earned, what I billed. That was the way the firm worked. And the times I worked the hardest, I just know we're not, I got something I have to pay, or I have to put a deposit down now because I got family and all that sort of stuff. I would work much harder. I remember really well.
And you found a way.
I bust my ass. Yeah. I got to bill more fees. I got to bill more fees, you know, because I'm not getting enough. And then I'd have a little rest, you know. But necessity always works. And I think we all impose a necessity on ourselves. It doesn't mean you're, some people I know are born with money, but the necessity is not the amount of money they need. They create another necessity. It's either achievement or recognition or some self thing that they need to do, you know, and they push themselves with their own sense of necessity.
Yeah.
And push themselves really hard.
But I know the story you told me, which I didn't know, when you're building Wizard, that you'd work and work to midnight and pull a pillow out and sleep on the floor for 3 hours and wake up and get cracking again, 100%.
I used to sleep on the floor. I didn't even have a pillow at one stage. I used to sleep just laying on the floor under the desk.
Yeah. I think that's the sort of hunger that, you know, I think that. And when you talk about, there's a lot of people out there now of new ideas and pitching things.
And I'll tell you also, Nick, I had no money, mate.
Yeah.
And I had a family.
Yeah. You have to at that point, you know.
I had no money. Everything was invested in Wizard. I sold my house.
Yeah, I remember we rented a lot of places.
Yeah. I sold the house. I had to sell the house. I had a house in Vaucluse. I sold it and I put all that money into Wizard. You know, people think, oh, well, you know, he put 100 grand into it and it was sold for hundreds of millions. It's just bullshit. I put everything I had into it and I put every minute of my time into it. To such an extent, I hardly ever saw the family, but I would sleep there on the ground under the desk, and it was crappy. It was a crappy office. It wasn't nice or anything like that. It was just, but it didn't bother me. I wake up fresh the next morning, and people would see me doing it too, so that it semi-inspired other people not to do the same thing, but at least to work harder.
Yeah.
It was sort of quite, but it was cool. It was cool that I did that. In hindsight, I did it. It wasn't cool at the time.
Cool. Well, I think we've run out of time today. Good chat, deep.
Yeah, cool chat. Deep, we're into it.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Okay, well, we'll see you guys. We'll hear from you. You'll hear from us in a couple of weeks' time. Off to Alexander's wedding. Have a good week.
See Bulla. You guys.
Bulla. Bulla, bulla. See you guys.
This has been the Mark Boris Podcast. You can follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Boris and find out more at markboris.com.au.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.